reading and literacy, like that's a civil right. And we all have to do whatever it takes to make sure that our kids have that skill set, because their lives are going to be so much better for it.
Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations with educational leaders and experts. My hope is to share with you not only valuable insights and knowledge from leaders in education, but have fun while doing it and shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Schools around the country are still feeling the effects of interrupted learning and are just now finding their way and helping students grow and succeed. And for many schools, they can't go back to the way things were before. And so they're working hard to make changes that actually impact all students. For Emily Myers, MTSS director of the Orange County Schools in North Carolina, she actually desires to help lead her team in the work of equitably supporting students through MTSS. Emily was kind enough to spend some time chatting with me about her journey with MTSS and how her mindset has shifted from using MTSS only to identify students for making special education decisions to now truly making equity the center of her work. She is even kind enough to share a story about how MTSS made a difference for a student very close to her heart. And in this episode, we also chat about how serving students means getting comfortable operating in the messy work of decision-making and how doing what's best for students isn't always clear. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Well, today on our podcast, we have the pleasure of talking with Emily Myers, who is the director of MTSS in the Orange County Schools in North Carolina, which, for if you don't know, is kind of in the Chapel Hill area in North Carolina. And she's here to talk to us today about their MTSS work and just the ways that they are supporting students. So welcome, Emily. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
Well, so let's just begin. I'd love to hear a little bit about you and your role and just the school that you serve.
Yeah, so I am the director of MTSS for our district. We have 13 schools. So we have 12 traditional schools and we have one alternative high school, but we're a relatively small district. So we have a really interesting mix of families who live in more rural communities and families who are kind of in the Chapel Hill sprawl as well. We're a really diverse community. Over 40 languages are spoken in our students' homes in Orange County Schools. And so we've done a lot of work in the past couple of years to really ensure that all of our stakeholders and their voices are being not just heard, but really kind of appreciated and valued. Personally, I graduated from UNC Chapel Hill, so close to my alma mater, which is really great. And then I received my master's from Elon University, and then later got my credentials to be a school administrator. So finishing up year 21 in education, and it's a great position that I'm in right now. So I hope, fingers crossed, that I can finish out here in this position.
I love that you described, you know, describing the district and the diversity of the different kinds of families and students that you serve. And I think that always is a unique position when you have, you know, not one sort of central demographic, but there's so many influencing, and there's so much, you're right, to like make sure your stakeholders are heard and valued and know that they are an important part of the community. And so, I think that's amazing. And I'm sure that the highlighting of all the different cultures that are represented is makes it also a really unique and special place. So
yeah, it's pretty great. We're lucky to be here.
That's great. Well, so in that, and I think that MTSS is a perfect, you know, a framework to help serve that kind of diversity and just the unique needs that you might have. Can you describe a little bit about your own sort of journey in understanding MTSS and, you know, now as a director of MTSS, I'm sure that maybe, that wasn't 21 years ago, wasn't sort of on your radar.
No. Yeah, for sure. So I think the first time that I remember, like noticeably remember talking about MTSS, in my earlier career, you know, we referred to it as RTI. And I actually remember in a PD, we all cut out a net of a pyramid, essentially, with actual scissors and things, and built built an actual pyramid in a PD. And I think at that point, I was supporting gifted students in a middle school. And so, you know, we were starting those conversations. I was actually in this district at that time. But gosh, by that time, I was probably in year 12 of teaching and didn't really remember a real kind of purposeful introduction, even to RTI and, you know, strategic interventions and things like that. I think prior to that, a lot of the work that we all knew and were living day to day was just good small group instruction. And so that was a good starting place for sure. But I actually got into MTSS work a couple years later when I changed districts. I moved from gifted work into serving as the MTSS and PBIS coordinator in a neighboring district. And it was in that neighboring county that I kind of finally was getting to see the breadth of what MTSS really is, moving beyond academics, moving beyond that RTI model into whole child, and really kind of whole community, thinking about our schools as kind of a safety net in lots of different ways. And I had a great opportunity there for several years. And while I was there, I added my administrator's license and thought I wanted to go back to a school and try some school leadership and see if some of the things that I was supporting with that great team at a district level, I was able to kind of replicate at a school level. So I moved back to my current county and served as an assistant principal in elementary school and was really able to kind of do that work daily instead of, you know, support and problem solve around that work. I was actually like doing it boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. So that was a really good opportunity to see the differences in theory and what we think will work and suggestions we're giving to schools, but then really doing those things, it's different. So that was a great experience. Did that for a couple of years. And now that I'm back in MTSS work and doing it at the district level, I think the biggest kind of shift in my thinking of the work is really now, I think I'm looking at it more than ever before through a lens of equity. And so really thinking this is the work, right? This is teaching and learning. This is improving outcomes for all of our students. And so in that way, I really feel like I am seeing it more as an example of equity work that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you said about going from, you know, learning about MTSS from the district level and then kind of on doing the boots on the ground work in a school, because so much of, I think sometimes the difficulty that educators have is they're like, yeah, that theory sounds great, but in reality, it looks so different. And I think like that holding that firm grip, I'm sure that that experience really informed so much of what you do now, because coming back, you're like, oh, well, I know that this kind of conversation with a teacher, how that might go, or like, you know, you've applied it in a different context. And I think that that's so important for administrators and leaders to have that firm grip on reality, because sometimes I think it is really hard for educators to go to like follow that leadership or like be a part of that conversation when they feel like those making those bigger decisions or doing that support don't completely understand what it looks like in the classroom, or, you know, there is that divide. It's that us and them part. And so I think it's really helpful for leaders to like, be like, I know that this is your reality. So that's really great. And then I also wanted to talk about, so kind of to follow up about the equity piece. I've had that conversation with other people before about how like MTSS being the work of equity, you know, like how does that, tell me a little bit more about that and how that informs the work that you do on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think when I started kind of seeing it a little bit differently and experiencing the work differently, it really was around the idea that as I was supporting schools in my neighboring district, we had, you know, I think 36 schools at that time. And, you know, there was a vast difference in school profiles and in, you know, all the way from free and reduced lunch percentages to students who are taking accelerated courses to numbers of staff in the building who were actually licensed teachers, right? So the differences in kind of at baseline, what we thought, you know, we're all one district, right? And they are, just like we are all one district. But when you dig a little bit deeper, you realize that each individual school has such different needs, such different areas where things are going really well for them and areas of strength, but also that we can't support our schools in this blanket, you know, everybody gets A, or, you know, everyone gets $3,000 or whatever the really the example is, because those individual school communities are so diverse that we are doing them such an incredible disservice if we are blanketing that support and if we're assuming what we think they need. So that piece as well. And I think when I started seeing it as, you know, this idea that fair, you know, fair isn't always equal, and the difference in something being equal and real equality and all of those pieces, I realized that, you know, what we've been doing for years hasn't been working. And that's not a we, the district next door or my current district, that's a universal we. Things are not working, right? And we had this amazing opportunity in COVID, even though there were so many things about COVID that were incredibly detrimental, and I don't know that we'll ever recover from, but there were opportunities there. You know, we had a chance to start doing things differently in education, and as a, you know, as a profession, I think we did capitalize on some of those, but that there are things I think we still missed. And I can say that personally too. There are practices that, you know, I had a chance to make some changes to that I've been slow to do. So it's not a judgment as much as it is a, let's just see where we are, you know, what's our current reality. I think the equity piece also really did shine through in COVID and post-COVID, that those inequalities were always there. We just didn't see them the same way. And so now I think we really have an opportunity to see the power of a framework like MTSS to really, you know, a high tide floats all boats. And this idea that like all of our kids can benefit from this problem-solving model, from database decision-making, from high quality core instruction, access to, you know, interventions and supports in those ways. And we can individualize that, and we can do some group things, and we can do some core universal things, but all of those kids deserve those options. And so if we can ensure that we're doing a better job meeting their needs, meeting them where they are, I think this framework has that potential. It's hard work. It's a hard work and hard lift.
Yeah. I think that you're right in the fact that like there are just layers of things that were peeled back that we can really see, like things that were always there about inequity in school and what people and students really needed. And we can't ignore them anymore. I think that's the part, is like, we can't ignore that what we were doing, it wasn't working. And things have to be different. I wanted to comment on something you said about how, sort of the innovation that happened with educators and how like we got to do things differently. Like that was like, I was in the classroom at the time and it was so exciting because like, oh, we actually get to do this differently. And kind of every school, they sort of gave us all kind of like the freedom to like mm-hmm. do what works for your school community. And which was really great. I thought, I was like, this is the way it should be. Like being able to like make the changes and do what's necessary to like help our students. And so I appreciated that you mentioned that. So when you think about this work around MTSS, like what were your sort of feelings about MTSS when you kind of first began, and then like how you feel about it now?
When I first began, I was really process driven. I was really, I think the teacher in me, right, from all those years, that type A, like, give me the rules, give me the steps, give me the cut points, and let's make a flow chart. And let's just start applying that, you know, in all these areas. And I was very comfortable in that black and white, like, here we go. But now I'm learning and have learned over the years, and I'm still learning. MTSS is in the gray. It's where you live in that problem solving of, we may have had a student who had a very similar data profile, all those things, and we made this choice for that student, you know, as a team, based on data and based on our knowledge of that student or whatever the case may be. And then we made a different choice for a different student. That gray, that kind of having to rely on multiple pieces of data and looking at the whole child and, you know, bringing families in and bringing in, you know, teacher voices and all those things, that's messier, right? It's not that black and white, let's apply the cut score and move on. And I don't think a lot of folks love that gray. Like it's
uncomfortable. Oh, I was going to say I was going to sort of respond and like, that is a really hard, because, you know, I think there is that part of like, as a teacher, you're like, okay, give me the thing that's going to solve my problem quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, like the resource, like you said, the flow chart of like, here's mm-hmm. step A, step B, step C, and it'll fix the problem. And then we move on. Like we want to be really systematic and procedural about it, but sometimes it is about coming to the table as a team and have that messy conversation, because it is a little bit of messy, right? Like everybody mm-hmm. kind of brings different perspectives, even every story, every student is different. And so like, that's going to influence the decision. But it is, you know, it is still like the part of the decision-making, like yeah. process, like it's a process, but it's also like a conversation. So
yeah, it is. And when I began and was learning so much, especially around, you know, things like progress monitoring and rates of improvement and, you know, all sorts of things that were super technical. And I was getting a lot of support from our school psychs, which was great, but I'm not a trained school psych, right? So I was learning all that and I was really trying to stay true to, you know, the fidelity of all of those things. And that was comforting because I felt like there was a right decision to make and I was making the right decision and I was helping lead teams to make the right decision. But the longer I've been in the work, and especially after COVID, honestly, a lot of those decisions, and not just about individual kids, but about, you know, selection of curricular resources or decisions about a school-wide intervention time versus a teacher building that into their day-to-day schedule, you know, even those sorts of things. There's a lot less that's black and white and a lot more that's gray. And I think some of that does go back to that equity piece too, that, you know, we have to trust folks in buildings and classrooms, school leaders, curriculum folks to know their specific area of expertise, but also the people that they serve, and what works really well in one building may not work really well in a building 4 miles down the road. That doesn't make one wrong and one right. They both can be right, but they're just right for those schools. And that's different. That's very different than how I started. And it's interesting, you know, I think sometimes when you're answering questions and you're supporting schools, and I like to use the phrase, like, I want to work and learn alongside you. Sometimes I feel like folks do interpret things as very black and white, when they like it to be a little more gray. And there's times that I'd like it to be a little more gray, but it really is more black and white. But it's that give and take. And I think the problem solving piece has really been an area that I've grown in, thankfully. This would be a really hard job if I hadn't picked that up. But the problem solving, and that, like, you bring everybody to the table, all the information to the table, and then you make the best decision you can based on what you know. Yeah. That has been a big change in my MTSS work over the years, I think.
Well, and that's the piece of, you know, making the best decision you can with what you know. That's really hard when I think many people, like, want to know a right answer, because if you know the right answer, then that will have the right outcome. And then you won't be, you know, your team won't be seen as making the mistake. But I think there is a humility that we all have to come to the table with when we're in that decision process of, like, I may not know the right answer, but here's what I do know. And then collectively going, okay, this is all the things we know. We can make that decision. But that's hard, especially. And I wonder sometimes, this is like a total side note, but I think I wonder sometimes with all the uncertainty that many of us faced, in the COVID times, I think there's a bit of, we want things to be black and white. We want things to be more certain. And it's hard getting back to being okay with it being gray. Takes some work, personal work, I think, for it, educators and for people. But I think sometimes that is, you hit up against things. Cause I knew that in some of our conversations we had, and as educators, we're like, you just tell us the answer. Like, we don't want to have to, like, live with that uncertainty, you know, just tell us what we need to do. So,
Yeah. And we're rule followers by nature, most educators. We like to do things well, and we like to do it right the first time. And, you know, this is an area where, you know, we are problem solving. We're trying something, we're monitoring that. If it works, great. We find ways that we can, you know, make it more effective. If it doesn't work, we go back to the drawing board and talk about why maybe it didn't work. But those are hard conversations to have, especially around something as, like, personal as teaching, and something as, you know, our educators, you know, in my district, I can speak for our folks, like, they take this work so personally, that it can be hard to feel like your kids are not growing, or that you're going to get to the end of your time with them and think, you know, I wish I would have done that differently. Or, you know, you're worried about a kid as you move them to the next, you know, grade level or whatever. And so I think those are such hard conversations, because at least our staff, I'm so thankful, they do a really good job of looking beyond the numbers, that it's not a scale score of 145, it's a child, and they know that child. And that makes it feel like it's a decision that we have to get right. So I can really appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, and I also think I think that is the beauty of with MTSS, of, like, if we're really implementing it well, and you're doing the progress monitoring in the way you should be, and it has that fluidity, like, there is that part that is assuring to me, like, in the work of, like, you know, we're going to try this intervention for 6 weeks. And if it doesn't work, we're going to, you know, do something. And I think that that's where, if you're doing that well, then it puts that less pressure, like, it can be more problem solving. But if you're going, we're going to stick them in this class for a whole semester, and then there's no progress, then it feels more disheartening, because you've lost all this time. And so I think that that is when you're implementing it well, it can be really powerful to be able to take that risk, or take, you know, like, doesn't feel as risky, I think, some of those decisions. So
yeah.
So speaking of kiddos, what can you give me kind of an example, or do you have an example, or a student, or even a group of students, or a school that comes to mind that really kind of exemplifies the power of MTSS?
Yeah. And it's interesting, because I can use a student who was a student when I met her. She was one of my students at my former elementary school where I was an assistant principal. And now she's my daughter. My husband and I and our oldest son adopted her and her biological sibling. And we, during COVID, moved from a family of three to a family of five through foster care. And, you know, my oldest daughter, when I met her, she was finishing, she was in first grade. And then, you know, she finished that year, not really finishing, right? Because we all went home for COVID. And, you know, as I met her and I was looking at, you know, data and of all of our students, you know, I noticed that she just had a lot of gaps. She had a lot of, in reading especially, just a lot of absences, a lot of really inconsistent performance, but also, just not enough information, right? And so she was a student that we said, you know, due to her data and due to what we knew about her attendance and those sorts of things, that we had a chance to really close some gaps if we intervened really intensively. And, you know, so she was a student that we felt like, you know, some tier three really intensive supports were going to be beneficial to her. And even through COVID and you know, some of those challenges, she was able to receive some really high quality tier three intervention. And that coupled with core instruction, she's a student that really was able to close gaps. It took a while, you know, because when you are facing some of those challenges, especially with COVID and virtual instruction and those sorts of things, but also for how behind she was, honestly, there was a lot of room to grow. And while she was being expected to kind of close those gaps on what she was missing, the rest of the instruction in her assigned grade level was moving forward, right? So it was that, it was kind of that squeeze of, we can't just step back and intervene and only intervene. We've got to be, during that same time, providing core instruction, you know, in your assigned grade level. And she worked really hard, and the folks that were supporting her worked really hard, and she closed her gaps, and she ended up exiting MTSS supports. She did not need any, you know, EC support in reading, even though initially, right, that data profile was really concerning. And in North Carolina, we do end of year tests, just like most states do. And she's a fourth grader now, and she passed her reading EOG this year.
That's so great.
You know, she is a perfect example of, you identify a need, you really individually problem solve for that student while you're still ensuring they have access to high quality core instruction, kind of come at it from both angles, and get those gaps to close. And, you know, she's a kiddo. If we were not implementing or implementing well in that instance, and I don't know where she would be right now as a reader. And, you know, reading and literacy, like, that's a civil right, and we all have to do whatever it takes to make sure that our kids have that skill set, because their lives are going to be so much better for it. Like, I can't even, you know, I talked to my husband about it, who's not in education, and, you know, he knows her as a daughter. He doesn't know her as a learner and that sort of thing. But, you know, I talked to him about it, and I can't help but like get choked up, that those folks changed the trajectory of her life. And like, that is incredible. So I'm choked up about it now.
I was going to say, I'm crying too. Like, this is not the first time on this podcast. And certainly won't be the last, but I think that is something it's just so powerful to remember that, like, making these kind of interventions and doing it really well really makes a difference for kids. I am going to quote someone I interviewed a few weeks ago or a few months ago, and that he said that, you know, oftentimes public schools are the last safety net for many students. And I think, especially when it comes to those reading and math, particularly literacy gaps, like, there's so much of life that depends on that. And I think that can it really does change a trajectory. And it's like that little pinpoint, you know, whatever there's like an analogy that talks about like 1 degree now change, you know, is so many degrees later of the trajectory. Yeah. And I just think that's really powerful to highlight that. And just, you know, I have such a heart for parents that do foster and adopt and just know that, that makes a difference for students and, you know, on top of their literacy and academic challenge, they're also dealing with other challenges as well, you know?
Yeah. 100%. And she's a great example of a kiddo that needed, you know, literacy support, obviously, but also needed, you know, lots of other supports, you know, those wraparound services and that idea that like, we can't just target the academics because there's so many other things that are impacting our students' abilities to grow and perform academically, that if we're only focusing on the academics, we're going to work really, really hard, but we're not going to see the fruits of that because we have to look at their, you know, social emotional needs and even their physical needs and, you know, hunger and all those things that, we're going to be missing a lot if we just focus on the academics.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Mm-hmm. I just want to acknowledge that that's a really powerful and story. So thank you. Well, and I know that there's like so many stories that can like come that are, you know, that every school district has of things that happen for students and groups of students. Well, I love ending our conversation around talking about sort of a fun school memory that we have, because, you know, a podcast is called Schooling Around. So for you, when you think about as a growing up or even just as an educator, if you have a really fun school memory, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So I grew up about, I don't know, 2 hours southeast of here in a very rural county, Sampson County, North Carolina, which no listener in the world will have ever heard from or heard about. And we were a system of 4 schools. So we had a lower elementary, and then we had an upper elementary. We had 1 middle and 1 high. So you went to school from K-12 with this many people. We in 7th grade, I remember this like it was yesterday. We had a lock-in, and all 7th graders spent the night in the school with our 7th grade teachers. And we all slept like in the media center in sleeping bags and like went bowling and just things that now, as an educator, as a parent, as a thinking of having myself locked into a school overnight with 200 seventh graders. No, thank you. Like all of that seems just, what were we thinking?
Bonkers.
Chaos, right? But that is like one of my best memories. And it was middle school, and it's really hard to have great memories of middle school. Those are some tough years. But we even had, I will spare you, but we even had like a team song that we sang. I'm 42, I'll be 43 in 2 months, and I remember the song. So like, it was just the greatest, it was the greatest memory. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's really great.
That's overnight with a bunch of 7th graders. That is brave. And, kudos to those teachers that did that. Hopefully they all volunteered and weren't voluntold to do it.
Yeah, they loved it. And I don't think they slept. I don't know how they could have.
No, because you always had to have somebody on duty.
on duty, on watch. Yeah. It's really great.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That's so great. And just thank you so much for this conversation. And I just really appreciate getting to know you and your school. So
yeah, it was great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to hear all our future episodes. As well, if you're enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and let us know how much you love what we're creating. Branchy Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchyminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branchy Minds.